Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Stop Being the Best Kept Secret. I am your host, Dr. Tana M. Session, organizational strategist, DEI thought leader, and all-around HR professional. And I'm so excited about today's guest. I have stalked him on LinkedIn for the last year. Every post I have him, I have my alerts turned on, so I know when he posts. And I'm like probably the second in line to like it or say something about it. And I can't wait for this conversation. You all sit back, get your tea, get your adult beverage, whichever one you think you're going to need, and just enjoy this conversation. So, Paul, I'm going to hand the mic over to you and let you do your own introduction and let the world know what problem do you solve.
Well, Tana, so I call myself a status quo disruptor. And so I personally didn't want to embrace it, but now I embrace it. I am a disruptor. And so I did work in higher ed. So I've done DEI work in higher ed and nonprofits. And as much as I enjoyed the work, something wasn't quite hitting right, you know, I stepped away from 9-to-5 DEI and I worked retail. And then as I was doing that, I was like, I still wanted DEI. I still cared about DEI. I listened to people, watch people's posts on LinkedIn and Twitter and Facebook. And so I was still drawn to DEI, but something about the 9-to-5 DEI job wasn't quite right. And so when I talked to a friend of mine, she was, and they were fired from their job. And they're like, yeah, they don't like disruptors. And I was like, that was it. You know, it's like, because they felt like, as much as I care about DEI, a lot of 9-to-5 DEI jobs are very performative, very like window dressing. They want to appeal to everybody, make everybody feel loved and accepted, which is good to a certain extent. But it's like, for me, all the stuff that was going on, so George Floyd and Breonna Taylor, and Ahmaud Arbery and Black Lives Matter movement, and then all the lip service, and then the war against CRT and the 1619 project and DEI. And I'm like, you know what? This whole we all bleed the same blood, it's true, but that's not the answer. We need to understand that if we're going to solve racism, it's not bad attitudes we need to solve. We need to solve inequity. So you can have you can fix bad attitudes, that's fine. We can love each other, we can say we're all one blood and all that jazz, that's fine. But at the end of the day, if I'm still facing inequity, I don't really care whether you love me or not. You know, I want my 40 acres and a mule. Amen. And beating on top of that. So
that's right. It's a reparations.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it. So yes, we are definitely kindred disruptors. You know, I've had clients who have offered me jobs and I've told them time and time again, you really don't want me on the inside. Mm. I'm a much better consultant than employee. Mm. I think in some ways I'm chronically unemployable for that exact same reason, because I'm not going to be performative. And I have fired clients who wanted me to come in and be performative and be the poster child of this whole initiative. And then they weren't really committed to it. And I was like, I can't, you know, in good conscience, sit in this seat as a consultant. Like, I'm not here for the check. I'm here for the change. And so if your employees are going to see me as this poster child for the work and then not have any type of difference in terms of what their experience is in the workplace, then this is not the company for me, and you can take your money elsewhere. And so, you know, it's been empowering to be able to do that, but it's also disheartening to know that there are so many companies that are still in 2024, still checking boxes, still being performative, backing away, backpedaling from things they promised back in 2020.
Yeah.
You know, and I too have been in this work for quite some time. I started in DEI work in 2017, I want to say. 2007, one of those, I can't remember anymore. It's been a while. And it's been interesting to see the evolution and the changing of the guards even around this work. But what have you experienced? You know, let's talk specifically since 2020, but what have you seen and experienced in regards to the change and the evolutions on your end?
Oh, the change in what? I'm sorry?
The changes or the evolutions in this work.
Yeah. I would say, I really appreciate seeing a lot of Black women realize, like, you know what, I'm just going to do my own, you know, and so they start their own, whether it's DEI consultant, whether it's change management, whether it's HR consultant, whatever it is, it's like, you know, a lot of Black people, especially Black women, have been like, you know what, all the stuff people are talking about, like the glass cliff and the glass ceiling and the marble ceiling and And you know, all these different ceilings and then the microaggressions and the can I pet your hair and what are your thoughts on this? And you know what, just the black woman was like, you know what, I don't need this. I'm gonna do my own, build my own table. So a lot of I've heard so many black women say, you know what, if you don't get a seat at the table, build your own table. And
Yep.
so like that is a testament to what corporate life is like. And I had to call it white collar racism. You know, it's like, you know, sometimes we get in that door, and when we do get in the door, we have to put up a lot of garbage, you know, and a lot of microaggressions and side eyes, and you know, and how do you pronounce your name, and what are your thoughts on this? And it's just like, yeah, it's like I'm trying to survive, keep the lights on, provide for my kids, you know, and I have to worry about if I answer this question, is that going to affect my job, you know? And I've even listened to white women who are disruptors, you know, like they bring up certain white supremacy. Like a colleague of mine, she was telling me, she's a white woman that is a DEI disruptor, and she was saying how she tried to gather her cousins and have a conversation about white supremacy, and one of them reported her to HR for that, you know. And she later backtracked, but it's like you can't even say white privilege, white supremacy. Those are like incendiary words, you know. It's like
Yeah.
I had another colleague, a man of color. He was he and I had a phone conversation. He spent time in these suites and high level stuff, you know. And so he's been up there in leadership, and he's like, yeah, if you say white supremacy, that's like calling me a anti-Latino slur. And I'm thinking like, wow, really? I mean, how does saying white supremacy compare to the N-word or whatever anti-Latino slur? It's like, no, those words were meant to put us in our place. You know, white supremacy is, it's not just white power, is more dominating resources. And so for you to equate that, I'm like, no, I can't accept that. That's not acceptable. I mean, like,
Yeah.
but yeah.
I don't accept that either.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's a lot of that happening right now, right? Where it's about the what about me type thing, or I'm also impacted, or reverse racism, reverse discrimination. And I'm like, we don't own the systems that were built to discriminate and cause racism. So how is it being reversed, right?
Right.
It's because people are being called into account. Is that what that is? It's because systems that have always been in place in this country or even globally are now being questioned, and people are quote unquote waking up, as they say, you're woke, you know, they're waking up and saying, you know, this isn't right. And yeah, this has been around for so long. And I do see the impact against my neighbor, my friend, my coworker, my classmate, you know, and I am able to take advantage of things that they aren't. And I am a few steps ahead just by the pure privilege of the color of my skin or the gender that I was born into. So I agree with you. I think there's a lot of this now, like everyone wants to play the victim, and it's
Yeah,
so sickening.
I think a lot of it really boils down to a lack of emotional intelligence. And I don't know if you have heard of Farah Harris, her book, The Color of Emotional Intelligence. That was such an eye-opening book. So I'm going to say now, read Farah Harris's book. I'm connected with her. Her book is called The Color of Emotional Intelligence. It was eye-opening. It talks about how people of color, and women and LGBTQ folks have had to develop emotional intelligence to survive as marginalized populations in a very white male cishet Christian society, because it's like, and you know, like you know, being a black person, black male, it's like, okay, when do I bring up this term? Who can I have this conversation with? Who can I not have this conversation with? And it's like I've had to think about race as long as I can remember. For a lot of white people, they have not had to think about race. And so now when they hear white supremacy or white privilege or whatever, you know, it's like these terms are like, what is this? You know? And so like when George Floyd's murder happened, all these academic terms flooded social media. And a lot of people, even a lot of people of color, they weren't familiar with these terms. And so that, and because they didn't have the knowledge, but they also didn't have emotional intelligence to process these heavy terms. And it's like, oh my gosh, like my friend was talking about, it's like me saying white supremacy, it's like calling him a slur, you know, or like calling us. So it's like, well, what is this? What do you mean? What are you trying to say? And I remember back in August, last August, I made a post about white supremacy, and it did really well. I thought it wouldn't, but it did. It like had I almost 400K views.
Wow.
I remember some white folks lost their mind on that post, and
I bet they did.
they did. If you go back far enough, it's a pyramid of overt versus covert white supremacy. And then like people were just like, deuce it. And I'm like, I'm not apologizing for anything I said. I said what I
Yeah.
said and I meant what I said, you know, and it was something else, you know, and that and the affirmative action post, but people, I had to delete and block so many people.
I bet you did, like
It
swat
was,
flies.
boy, it was something else. I checked the hornet's nest with those, but yeah, you know, and then I remember another colleague of mine, she posted about white supremacy, and this, and I remember it was white men specifically. His post like, these are not the terms we're supposed to be using. And I'm like, yeah, they kind of are, you know, but, and it's just like, you gotta realize your
Not
positions too.
and to your point, Paul, not talking about it doesn't make them go away, and it doesn't make them non-existent, right?
Right, speaking
They
again the same thing.
exist. It's like telling, it's gaslighting us at this point. It's like, well, we don't want to talk about that. Why do we have to talk about that? Why is everything about race? Why is everything about gender? Why is everything about LGBTQ plus? Because it is.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah. You all through the first punch. So I don't know. I mean,
That's right. I like that. That's
so I
right.
don't know. I mean, yeah, so stop quoting Morgan Freeman. I hate that Morgan
Oh,
Freeman quote.
oh.
And I've heard that he's changed his mind, which is great, but the point is that people cling to what he said back in 2005 and
Yes.
2003, whenever he gave that response, they cling to that to dear life, and they keep posting on social media. It's like, well, yeah, I know, and stop trying to, and they're shielding what it is. They hide behind a black man who says something that assuages their feelings and they don't want to let go. And it's like, see, this black person gets it. Why don't you? And I'm like, oh, I still think, you know, and
They do
so.
that every year during Martin Luther King Day too. So they take the little snippet of his "I Have a Dream" speech where he only talks about the being valued by the moral of their character, not the color of their skin, and they latch onto that. And they're like, "Did you hear the rest of the speech?"
Do you know the author of the 1619 Project, I think Nicole Hannah Jones, is it?
Yeah.
She went somewhere and she read an entire MLK speech, but they didn't know it was the MLK speech. And so, and they got all like, and she said, oh, by the way, this is MLK, you know, and they're like, and like they couldn't say that. They're like, yeah, I found out about the real MLK, didn't you? You know, not the lovable Negro, but the disruptor.
Exactly. I mean, that's what he was. He was a disruptor, and his the whole group around him, you know, they disrupted the institutional and systemic racism of that time to get the Civil Rights Act passed, you know. And you know, unfortunately, it cost his death, you know. And I feel like where we are right now is people were still angry from 1964. They had a long-term plan to get us back, right? And I feel like that's a lot of what we're seeing and hearing, and that's where all of the angst and the anger is coming from on the other side of this conversation, is because they still are, in a lot of ways, still angry that we had the Civil Rights Act, that we had the Voting Rights Act, that we have same-sex marriage, like all of the things that have progressively moved us forward as a civilization here in the United States. And people are like trying to drag it back. They're dragging it back. And they're basing it on moral values, Christianity or Christian values, you know, nationalism. And I'm like, call a thing a thing. That's not what it is.
One day I'm going to post about this. I don't know how I'm going to do it.
Oh, I can't
I
wait.
don't know how well it's going to do, but I'm going to like, hey, I'm gonna be like, dear white evangelicals, please gather your cousins. That's gonna be the opening title. I don't know if the algorithm will shut it down, because I know LinkedIn's been getting more restrictive as of late, and so. But
Yeah, they
I'm
have.
like, man, one day I'm gonna like say something. I'm like, man, can y'all white evangelicals, can you just gather your cousins and like gather around? Let's have a conversation about what are y'all doing to the rest of us.
Exactly. They're using the Bible and script. I'm like, stop it. Just stop it. Stop it. Stop. You're taking everything out of context, everything, including critical race theory, Black Lives Matter. You know, then they tried to, what was it, Antifa? It's like, oh.
I'm like, yeah, y'all still don't know what CRT
This
is. Like, they do not.
woke, they still don't know what woke is.
Oh, I remember one fool, Herschel Walker.
Oh.
Yeah, he was he got there was a tape of him when I was still on Twitter. He was like, I'm so sick of CTR. What is CTR? I'm like, dude, you don't even get the letters right. What are you
Only
talking
three
about?
letters.
Right, CTR. Like, I don't know whether to laugh or to be angry. And I'm like, man, dude, it's bad enough that you're sucking up to these people, but now you can't even suck up right. You just like, I'm like, bro, you have too many concussions or something, man.
Yes,
And
too
normally I'm in
many.
another state's business, like when California had Larry Elder versus New Gary Newsom, and then I know Georgia had Raphael Warnock versus Herschel Walker. Normally, it's like I'm not in that state; it's not in my business. But like this time, I was like, please do not let those House Negroes win. No
Right.
Elder, no Herschel Walker. This is gonna set us all back. But I'm glad they didn't.
So am I. I was like, come through Georgia once again. Thank you. And I'm concerned about this election, so here we are, and it's April 20, well, soon to be April 2024 as we're recording this. And we are months away from an election where we have Biden versus Trump. So what are your thoughts on that as it relates to not only the state of the nation, but DEI?
You know what? I don't know. I don't even know if we have any good candidate, any good third options. I'm not going to be happy either way, if I can be honest.
It's like, how do we get here?
And it's like, I'm just like, man, I don't know what to feel, and I can't be happy. I don't feel safe with either of them. And it's like, oh man,
I know, I know.
every time it's just like, ugh. I'm thinking more like, can we think more to 2028 or something? I don't
We
know.
skip this one? Come back?
Oh
Exactly.
man,
I'm like, we need a pass. We need a pass. We need to come back in 4 more years. Give us some time.
Well, I'm like, Michelle Obama, you want to be a late entry in this or something, please?
Right, it's like we need a what they call a long chance, like someone to come along that we just didn't suspect and say, you know what, I'm gonna save the day. I'm gonna throw my hat in the ring. Oh, finally, thank you, thank you. It's
Yes, Michelle
like,
Obama.
where's Bernie when you need him?
Yes, too bad. Yes, I know Hillary wouldn't try a third time, but Bernie,
Yeah,
Hillary,
no.
I don't know, Michelle, Obama's cousin, I don't know. Cousins. Oh,
Somebody, anybody.
another Bush? I don't know.
It's some scary times as we were talking about before we started recording. It just seems like the world is just a hot dumpster fire, and it's so scary. And in the work that we do, in a lot of ways, we have to stay optimistic. We have to believe things will get better, and that all of this work is not for naught, and that there will be change in our lifetime. And my son even asked me that. My son's 28, and he's been seeing me do this work for years and years. And he's been with me to record like courses for LinkedIn, and he's been here as I've done work. So he hears the stuff that I do. And I always am so concerned because he's like, Mom, do you really think that's gonna make a difference? Mom, do you really think the world's gonna change? Mom, do you really think the workplace is gonna get any better? And I was like, I have to believe that, Brandon, because if I don't, then what am I doing this for? Right. And I said, it's for your generation and the next, like, even if I don't get to experience the full benefit of the work that's been done by my generation, the one before me and the one before that, dating all the way again back to civil rights, the baton has to be passed, but we also have to believe that it's gonna get better because we can't lose hope.
Agreed. I was hearing what I was talking to a coworker of mine, and I was saying how like, yeah, my son is mixed. My sons are mixed, and I obviously they have some privilege that I don't, because their light skin and their hair is more fair, but still, in the eyes of many, they're black men, and stuff. And they'll face some sort of microaggressions, maybe not to them to the degree that I did. I have a will, but
It'd be different.
they did still have a black father, and you look hard close enough, they got black in them. And so it's like, I do this work for them because I don't want them to have to go through what me and my mom went through, and her mother, and so like my mom was a nurse, and she told us stories of how, these old white patients didn't want a black nurse, or they told her aims, or they see her and they automatically think food person and not a nurse or medical professional, and my grandmother, she had limited jobs, she did laundry in people's homes, and people initially left dirty underwear, extra dirty underwear, just like, ha, I'm spite you, and all that kind of stuff. I can go in more detail, but it's just like this like, I don't want, I want my sons to like know about what happened, but I don't want them to have to suffer because of that, so they can see what happened to the black side of their family, what they experienced, but like, okay, maybe I don't have to go through this, but I can at least appreciate what my father and his mother and her mother went through, and so.
True. Yeah, exactly the same. And I feel like it's every generation's responsibility to make it better for the next. And that's a lot of the effort that gets me out of the bed every day is to think about that, right? And I, again, looking at my son, his friends, and just having conversations with them and hearing their perspective, you know, it just makes me feel like it's getting better. Like we've done a good job with that next generation as parents. And, you know, I feel like even when we go down another level, he's Gen Y. So when I think about Gen Z, that group was even more inclusive. And, you know, over 40% of them identify as ethnic minorities, and over 1 in 5 identify as a member of the LGBTQ plus community. So for these organizations and these leaders and even these politicians that think that they can just use these loud microphones to push people backwards, what they're failing to think and to take into consideration is that they're only talking to the people that are within their generation in a lot of ways, or the ones before them, because these next two generations are like, what are you talking about? Like, of course I expect to see someone who looks like me in leadership. And of course I expect not to be, you know, treated differently because of the color of my skin or how I identify. I expect you to use my proper pronoun. And, you know, I expect to have opportunities that, you know, my parents or grandparents didn't have because I have the knowledge, the skills, and the qualifications, and I'm the best qualified person. So I like the fact that they're embracing that, and they just have that kind of like, you know, just courage and just speaking truth to power, you know, all the things that I didn't do at that age, you know, because I was scared of losing my job and, you know, didn't want to ruffle feathers and wanted to be liked and, you know, wanted to get promoted. And they're like, I don't care, I'll leave this job without a job. It's like,
I remember I really thank Gen Z because I remember
yes.
thinking that I when Florida abolished their DEI and fired all the staff. I remember reading how Florida students protested. Thank you, even though your governor's wacko and boss. I'm glad the kids are like, you know what, we don't have to stand for this. I'm like, I don't know what this will do, but I at least appreciate the fact that they stood up for what's right. And
Those are
so,
future voters, and I think that's what they're forgetting too, right? Like a lot of them are turning 18 and they're going to be able to vote in this election for the first time. And I hope that they vote with their conscience and
I
they
hope
vote
so
with,
too.
you know, they vote with the mindset of change and the mindset of you're not going to pull us backwards. Like we're not going back to when women don't have rights and, you know, people going to live in certain neighborhoods and can't go into certain stores and restaurants. And, you know, like that's not going to happen.
Yeah, they're trying to take us back to the 50s. It's like, no, I'm sorry,
Yes.
50s are done.
They're done. That's right.
Done. It's done.
That
So,
whole make America great, like that's a dog whistle for exactly what they're trying to do. Yeah. So tell me about how do you get your inspiration for your post? Now, if anyone's not following Paul, I want you to say your last name because I want people to know how to say your last name. I want to know how to find, say again.
Latipo.
Latipo. If you all are not following Paul Latipo on LinkedIn, you are missing out on the conversation. This is just a snippet of what he does. I'm telling you, it was enough to draw me in, and I reached out to my team and I was like, I want to interview him for my podcast. I hope he says yes. So how do you get inspired? How do you come up with the things that you say? And like I said, you call a thing every single day.
It helps when I'm on social media a lot. So either LinkedIn, or I used to be on Twitter before that became a dumpster fire, or an even bigger dumpster fire. And so, people would just say all these wacky things, and I'm like, that is wrong. And instead of tearing that person down, I want to, like, you know what? I'm going to build a platform, and I want to write about this, all the stuff, the wacky stuff that I hear, and say why this is wrong. And so, and for me, that's all. I feel like it's also therapeutic, because it's like, I don't like me tearing people down. It doesn't help anybody, and it's like, this is bitterness on my part. And it's like, you know what? Rather than tearing a stranger down that I don't know, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna see what you said, and I'm gonna make my own post about this. Like today's post is
Right.
because earlier this week, people were talking about what they said on Twitter and didn't earn it. And I read multiple posts. I'm like, I gotta make my own post about this. This ain't right. I gotta set it straight. And so when people say stupid stuff and inappropriate stuff, and that's what gets me motivated. So when people stop saying, when we get to have zero nonsense, then I won't have much anything to
You
say
won't have anything to say? I
anymore.
don't think we're gonna get there, Paul. Just a newsflash. As long as we have I call them keyboard gangsters. We got keyboard gangsters that can hide behind a screen and spew out all this hate and misinformation and misguided information and half truths, half stories. Yeah, I think you'll continue to have inspiration for your posts. So that's gets the fire going in your belly. I love it. I do. I too am inspired by a lot of the things that I see, and sometimes I just have to sit it out. I'm like, I'm just gonna sit this one out because it's just, I have way too much to say. We only have 3,000 characters on LinkedIn, and I have been maxed out more than once. And I'm like, yeah, I'm letting everybody else go for it. Just go, and I'll join in on the comments because yeah, it's a lot going on. It's so much.
Yeah. And so right now I'm working on a book. Because I feel like, okay, writing is my thing, and so I want to write a book, but I'm trying to find a traditional publisher because I don't really feel like doing a self-publishing route. And so, so like, you know, if you're out there in publishing, hit me up because I'm trying to get a proposal package going and a publishing deal so I can finish this book and get out there in the world, because I feel like I love LinkedIn, but I feel like me having a book, it just give me some extra reach, you know, and just kind of heavy, the same stuff I write. Oh, I see right in my posts. And so yeah,
no character count.
Right. No algorithms.
No algorithms.
If I say KKK, I don't have to worry about my post being taken down.
That's so. Right. You have to say K dot K dot K.
I say triple K just to,
oh, there you go. There you go. Gotta trick the algorithms.
Yep.
Wow. All right, so Paul, let people know how they can find you. What are you working on? Can they come see you speak somewhere? Do you do speaking engagements?
I do. I mean, I well, not as much as I used to. I think this whole backlash against DEI has a lot of people kind of shook. And so, but yeah, I mean, I do virtual, in person. Follow me on LinkedIn, look me up. And, you know, I try to post once or twice a week, you know. And so I might take a little break here in a couple of days, but but yeah, I try to post like twice a week, and so and you know, that's not hard to find me.
No. Like I said, set that alarm, everyone. You don't want to miss it. Trust me, they're always and I always get a tickle, and then I get like, yeah, that's right, what he said. He said it better than I could. He beat me to the punch. I love it. Repost. All right, Paul. Well, I appreciate you being on Stop Being the Best Kept Secret. I could talk to you all day long about this. I'm so glad we're connected in virtual real life. And now, and I guess this is 2D now. And hopefully one day in 3D, we'll get to meet in person. Our paths will certainly cross. I think with the work we're doing and the passion we have for it, I wouldn't doubt that that wouldn't happen. But, you know, are there any websites or particular handles that people can follow you
yeah.
on?
Yeah. Not on X anymore, but yeah, LinkedIn. I think criticalconversationsconsulting.com is my website. And so criticalconversationsconsulting.com. So you can look me up on there, what I offer, package deals and whatnot. And so fill out the form if you want me to come visit or do a virtual training for you.
Perfect. Well, thanks again, Paul, for being here. I really appreciate it. It was a great conversation.
Yeah.
And everyone, this is your host, Dr. Tana M. Session. Thanks for listening in to another episode of Stop Being the Best Kept Secret. And make sure you set your alerts on all platforms to know when the next episode drops. And as we said, go ahead and make certain that you follow Paul on LinkedIn. Go to his website. We'll have it in the transcript as well, so you'll be able to find it there. And you can always find me at Dr. Tana M. Session on all platforms. Thanks, and see you next episode.